Good evening and welcome, dear ones, beloved friends. We come together this evening to take our place once again, to rest at the center of a circle of great intention, to listen deeply, and to engage in a conscious exchange, to feed and to be fed. May our work be food for lifting the consciousness of the world and ourselves. In the name of the transcendent Father Creator and the divine Logos of all which is and the divine immanent, eternally present always, as the one yet manifested in the many. Amen. And so it is. And Catherine, you can start the spotlighting now, please. So continuing in the season of Eastertide on this Feast of the Ascension, we endeavor to understand and embody what it is to have a consciously oriented life. What does this look like? And in the context of our topics at hand, we again turn to Jean de Salzman, as we did last week, considered Mr. Gurdjieff's most celebrated and accomplished and trusted pupil, whose date of death was May 24th, 1990, at the age of 101. So this is what Jean de Salzman left us. She says, "My deep wish is to succumb entirely to an inner voice, the feeling of the divine, of the sacred in me. I know that a higher energy, what religions call God or Lord, is within me. It will appear if my mind and body are truly related. God is here when the two forces are opposed and a third unites them. I can ask for help in order to unite these forces in me. I can say, Lord, have mercy, in order to be." May it be so for us that we come to the point of knowing the sacred within and without, and knowing that we can always call upon the Lord and pray that highest of prayers, Lord, have mercy. So a special note, next week, there will be a message sent next Thursday morning. However, we will not have a class on Thursday evening. It is a pause, an early summer break, if you will, a time to just rest and digest all that we have been given so far. Incredibly enough, we are approaching half of our curriculum for the year already. So it's time to give ourselves a rest for the week and enjoy the long weekend, perhaps. So now we prepare to enter into Lectio Divina. This is the time of our preparation exercise to come to the point of inner stillness and no tension, to know the sacred divine within and without, as Jean de Salzman urged us to. Mind and body related, receptive, gathered, aware, fully present. Each of us is here at this particular time and place for a purpose. Will I be receptive? Constate what is being transmitted? Will I contribute and participate? What do I wish for? This matters. For how we come matters. How we participate matters. For that is what we are emanating to the group. And the group is emanating out into the world. And tonight we dedicate our time to healing the violence of the world, beginning with the violence that is in ourselves. Thus, we lay down all constructions and thoughts that I know what is to the right and what is to the left, and simply ask for mercy. Mercy for us all in our vulnerabilities. We place ourselves here now with intention and imminent trust. With back upright, still, and contained, residing in our own atmosphere, unentangled in the world without. We scan our presences, our bodies, particularly our faces, the small muscles of the face. Letting go of all tension and constriction. Present. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being. All being. Everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and life and hope, all affirming, all denying, and we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it and ask that all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. In this breathing, we sense that all is flowing, becoming, conjoining, and every particle of this universe in our own being is microcosm. I hand over complexities. I hand over plans. I hand over anxieties and small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand uncovered before God and one another. And we enter into the prayer of Lectio Divina. Taking our passage in, our visual in, taking in these impressions, bringing them into ourselves. For the earth and its fullness of the Lord's, an undivided whole, merging and interpenetrating aspects of one whole reality, indivisible and unanalyzable, purposeful, meaningful, and a unity. No part to be left out, including our relationship with all material objects. Being in contact even with material objects and being out of contact is no less than the difference between being in one world and being in quite a different world. When we are in contact, we are aware of existence, aware of presence. When without contact, we're only aware of what's going on inside ourselves, a state of sleep and dreams. What world are we in? What world do we wish to be in? For the earth and its fullness are the Lord's, an undivided whole, merging and interpenetrating aspects of one whole reality, indivisible and unanalyzable, purposeful, meaningful, and a unity. No part to be left out, including our relationship with all material objects. Being in contact even with material objects and being out of contact is no less than the difference between being in one world and being in quite a different world. When we are in contact, we are aware of existence, aware of presence. When not in contact, we're only aware of what is going on inside ourselves, a world of sleep and dreams. What world are we in? What world do we wish to be in? For the earth and its fullness are the Lord's, an undivided whole, merging and interpenetrating aspects of one whole reality, indivisible and unanalyzable, purposeful, meaningful, and a unity. No part to be left out, including our relationship with all material objects. Being in contact even with material objects and being out of contact is no less than the difference between being in one world and being in quite a different world. When we are in contact, we are aware of existence, aware of presence. When without contact, we're only aware of what is going on inside ourselves, a state of sleep and dreams. What world are we in? What world do we wish to be in? Amen. So now I invite you to share perhaps what you received from the reading, from the message. What came to meet you that you could share with us? Becky, please. Good evening.
Good evening, Marianne. How are you?
Oh, good. It's good to see you, Becky.
Thank you. Yeah, this one really spoke to me because, you know, I have four kids and four in-laws and eight grandkids, and we're all going to be together next week, you know, starting with the holidays. And, you know, and as much as I love the time together, but I feel like sometimes there's missed opportunities to have deeper conversations with the kids and in-laws. And so the words purposeful, meaningful, and a unit really spoke to me. And my sister-in-law had just given me a book called The Art of Gathering. And it talked about creating like almost an aim or wish, you know, an intention for particular times of the day. And I just thought about this deck of cards that two decks of cards that I have that have some wonderful questions that I thought of my Florida room that, you know, I'm going to put a no phone zone sign, you know, and invite them to come and have a bowl with these cards that we can draw from. So I just got real inspired just through that reading today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Becky. Those of us who are going to be with the extended family this weekend, those are good tips. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So Greta, good evening.
Good evening, Marianne. What struck me during the reading was a feeling of expansion, an expansion not only of myself outward, but of all material and things outward and in relation. And it reminded me of the place in the Gurdjieff work, I think it's In Search of the Miraculous, where Uspensky sees a copper ashtray and really relates to it in where it must have come from, how it got to his house, how it was made, etc. And I've had that experience this week with a tomato. A friend of mine in San Antonio gave me some of the first tomatoes from his vine. They were not ripe when I got them, and I have been looking at them and tending them and making sure that they're in the perfect ripened state and just enjoying their process of ripening with them. And I ate one last night. And so it brought together exactly what you were reading tonight. So thank you.
Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you, Greta. Thank you. Karen, welcome.
There we go.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you. I related a lot to what Greta had said and feeling this feeling of an expansion and the choice that was offered about where do I choose to put my focus and thinking about I was watching a program on PBS with this new awarded Black architect, and he was talking about his work and his design and how he included building materials of the area, how he considered the people who were going to use it, how he considered it really offering a blessing of gathering and purpose. Mm-hmm. And it was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I thought, that's what the reading reminded me of we all have purpose, and it's nice to have an aim and a focus of what we want to consider.
Absolutely. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Tracy, good evening.
Good evening. Yes, I so appreciated the phrase, the earth is an indivisible whole. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that just really resonated. That we all are a part of the earth. We're one with the earth. We're part of a living organism of the earth itself. And how that's not my view normally. Normally I divide things. Yes. And think of things as in, some things that are inside and some that are outside, and nature and beauty and natural wonder included and so many things, like the photograph indicated, things I would exclude, plastic, whatever things. Yes. So it was just really beautiful. It kind of redeemed the whole for me, that everything belongs. And I was reminded, we are a closed system, and every drop of water I drink is water that's been here since water was given. And I drink the same water the dinosaurs drank. And it was just good. It was good to feel that unity and to know this is all in God, and I can give it all back to God as an undivided whole.
Indeed. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you. So we'll hear from Cami and then Troy, and then we will close this part of our time. So Cami, please. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. This actually relates to a share that I took to my work group this week. And what spoke to me was purposeful, meaningful, and a unity, no part to be left out. And what world are we in? Each year I try to choose a theme to my year for my work. And my work this year is on together, which fit really nicely when I started doing this work and thinking of bringing my three centers together. Mm-hmm. And what I have found in the last year due to COVID, due to other conditions, I've lost loved ones, lost a brother. I'm coming up on a year anniversary. And my parents have been gone for a few years. And there's a tendency to be lost to those loved ones when they pass. And so for me, the work of being together and purposeful, meaningful, and a unity is to really appreciate in a more complete way the constant relationship that I can have even with the loved ones that have passed. And I had the experience this last week to travel with my daughter, who is expecting our first grandchild. I shared a picture of that little embryo 1 week. And I took her to a place where my grandmother took me. And we have many little miracle stories of this place in Iowa. It's the green belt that has bluebells that come out in the springtime. And we feel very close to our ancestors in this place, that we've gone there for hardships. We've gone there when seeking wisdom and encouragement. And the communion of saints, or the conscious circle of humanity, as the work says, is really strongly felt there. Mm-hmm. And to be there with my daughter and my future granddaughter, and in the communion of saints or conscious humanity with my family, just really, what world are we in and what world do we wish to be in? I want to be in a world where, as our previous speaker said, that I feel connected to those bluebells, to the earth, to my daughter, my future granddaughter, and my grandmother, and that it all is connected.
Very beautiful. Thank you, Cami. That sacred lineage. It's wonderful. Thank you for that sharing.
Thank you.
It's very meaningful. Troy, good evening.
Good evening, Marianne. Thank you. The picture of the camera, I was waiting what would show up for me with the picture of the camera with that beautiful reading. And it brought to mind how photographers make a living, greats like Ansel Adams, yes. In that there's a, and why anyone would take a picture using a camera, if not to to connect with something.
Yes.
And Minor White was a American photographer. He said that something like, he said, be still with yourself and wait until the object of your attention affirms your presence. And so the reading made me think of our desire to connect and be present with what is and not go to sleep. So thank you.
May it be so. Thank you, Troy.
Thank you.
What beautiful sharings we have had so far this evening. Very meaningful, each one. So thank you for your gifts, your vulnerability. And now I am very joyful this evening to welcome Karen Betts, who will lead us from last week's homework about three-centered devotion into relatedness to the all, including material objects. So good evening and welcome, Karen.
Oh, thank you, Marianne. So let me pull up last week's homework. So to practice the seven movement prayer every morning, hang on 1 second. There we go. Can't see it there. Okay. The seven movements prayer every morning. And what is your experience? read or speak aloud the prayers that were covered in the email and in the talk? Or explore a practice that opens your heart and draws you in deeper? You know, is there a way to incorporate any missing sinners into your devotion? So I'm eager to hear what landed for you. I'd love your insights. Michael, please.
Hi. I have about a 20-minute commute to my office, and every day almost for years and years as I drive to the office, or even if I'm walking to the office in other circumstances, I have this whole series of morning prayers that I do, which includes chanting and the Gayatri Mantra and prayers to angels, and the whole litany takes 15 to 20 minutes. So it's perfect. And it's always done aloud. Driving down the interstate, chanting, praying out loud, walking along the street, chanting, praying out loud. And kind of the recent new realization, if you will, to it from the Christine O'Brien teachings is that, oh, right. And I'm also stimulating the vagus nerve as I'm chanting Om Bhur Bhuvah Svaha and all of the others. So it's a lot better than listening to NPR.
Thank you for a great, great way to use all three centers. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
So certainly for me, when I find I do things in repetition, they can become very mechanical. And I forget I said that one already or whatever. How do you keep it fresh and conscious?
Every once in a while, I'll realize that I have lost track. Did I do that chant of my chakras three times or two? And when I wake up to that, I'll do it another once or twice to, because more is better. It's an attention exercise. And if I'm getting into some squirrely traffic and lane changing and things, which is sometimes the case, I'll stop. I'll put my attention where it needs to be to do what I need to do safely. And then when I'm, I've also figured out if I get in this lane and just get behind somebody, I don't have to pay attention to traffic for the next 10 minutes. I can just return to the practice. So yeah, things become mechanical and then we bring our attention back to them and, you know.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, it's the same as the rest of life. Everything can become mechanical. And can I self-remember in the moment while I'm eating my toast, while I'm talking to my wife, while I'm driving to work, while I'm, you know, you name it. It's just the exercise is incarnating and being present in the moment. And doing that in the most repetitive situations, I think is building something.
Thank you. Becky, please.
I decided this week that I would try to bring in more of my emotional center because I too have been saying these prayers, but I realized I was reading the prayers and sometimes not really, most of the time, not speaking them out loud. And as I asked God to show me how can I bring my emotional center in, I remembered how much I love to sing. And I remembered some of the songs that I have sung in different churches throughout the years. And so this week, I created a playlist of about four or five songs, singing along with out loud with Andre Bocelli and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir singing the Lord's Prayer and How Great Thou Art, and just so many others. That my heart just opened up so much. And I, as a result of that, I just felt like I was with God and the majesty of God and the glory of God and recognizing that it's in me and it's in everybody else. And that influenced, I know it influenced my work this week. I had a much stronger desire to really, really work. And I've been working on some things. And I think I was able to be more honest with myself in my observations, and observing in particular a situation where I recognize that I have been third or second force in a relationship that I didn't know before. And so it was, there were a number of things that happened as a result of having a time of devotion and actually singing my heart out with other people.
So. Well, thank you. Yes, singing brings a vibration. It literally, we're vibrating within, we're vibrating our vocal cords, we're adding vibration out. And when it's sacred music, what a beautiful thing to give the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Bonnie, please.
Hello.
Hey.
I went outside. I got down on my knees, right on the ground where my old tree was with the wood chips, and prayed aloud. My hands on my heart. And I felt so much a part of everything that was just that I was a part of the entire, every particle of the universe. I just felt like it was the whole thing was encompassing me. It was a beautiful feeling. And I think the comments that people are making about stimulating the emotional center. And I just felt it just resonated with me. I just felt my entire self was in the prayer, and it did make a difference with my observations. I was more keenly aware of things when I was getting down, and I was doing that. And it's not as easy for me to get down on my knees with a knee replacement, but I didn't think about that at the time, and I didn't, and it just felt wonderful. So I'm putting all the centers together and in this prayer, and it felt wonderful. So I will continue to do that.
And I think you've just demonstrated, how important literally our postures, our gestures are, and how much they also speak of what's in our heart and our emotional center. Oh, great. Thank you. Martin or Tamara?
Yes. Yes. Hi, it's Tamara.
Hi.
So, hey, Karen and everybody. So I had a really wonderful experience this week with Three Center Devotion. And so I am number three. I spend too much time in my head. And so I was going through some difficult times trying to deal with being an empty nester. And so a email came to me on Monday asking if I could help with, a nonprofit that I work with. And so it would involve using my moving center. And so I decided this would be great. I'm going to go out there and bring my moving center into, my devotion. And I think about devotion, I think about, you don't have to be in a church or a monastery, or, you can be, practicing devotion anywhere. And so I thought it would be a great experience. And it sure was. And I felt like it was God's grace bringing it to me, which was really just so wonderful, because I was there with other mothers. And we were, setting up an apartment for, some refugees. And it was amazing, because one of the mothers said to me, "I'm going through empty nest syndrome." And I said, "Wow, really?" And so we started talking, and it was like God's grace brought that to me. And plus bringing in my moving center, because I feel like my body sometimes says, "You're spending too much time in your head. Let me help you, consciously resolve these conflicts. I'm here to help," but I don't tend to use it, or integrate it as much as I should. So anyways, it was just a beautiful experience. I was just moving stuff around and bringing in my body and being more centered and devotion at the same time, and just loving. My heart was just exploding with all these mothers there. And then we had to get some help from some people, because some of the things were too large. And these men walked by, and I said, "Do you mind helping us?" And they didn't speak our language, I could tell. But a woman peeked over the fence, and she had a sari on, and she started talking to the two men, and they put everything down and went over and helped us. And there were about five women. And I looked over at her, and I just said, "Thank you so much." Anyway, they helped us move some other stuff in there. And I just thought it was just a beautiful gift for me. God's grace, because, I was like, here we are, mothers helping mothers. And there's another mother coming and helping us. So it was just, God's grace comes in. And I remember before I was saying that mantra that I like to use, and that is, "God, come to my assistance," or, "Lord, make haste to help me." And I surely got the gift of God's grace. So it was beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, no, your prayers were answered. And what a great demonstration of your being drawing your life. You drew to you exactly what you needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
Greta, please.
Here I am again. I was so happy to hear both Michael's and Becky Motz's contributions. And it reminded me of how I also give gratitude and draw in that emotional center. Because Michael, whether he's walking or he's driving, he's speaking, he's chanting aloud. And Becky brought in the whole musical thing and how our emotions can be drawn with the music. And I find myself in a lot of gratitude when I'm in immediate awareness of my surroundings and all I've been given. And I generally sing. I don't sing like Becky to the Lord's Prayer, but like the baby song, You know, that we sing to all the babies to make them feel good, and we tell them to go to sleep. And I sing like that for, you know, in gratitude for so many things, for people and experiences and things. And it really does draw the emotional center in there. And if we really belt it out, we're using all the sensations of our body at the same time. So
absolutely bringing in that moving center to support that emotional center experience. How beautiful. Thank you. Leslie, please.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, I'm a body person, and when I get anxious, usually what I do is start charging around and cleaning or go for a walk, and I get moving. I'm a teacher. School just ended, and I share a horse with someone and found out that she is going to be moving to another state, so I'm going to be letting go of the horse. Anyway, then I go into my mind, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Maybe I'll buy an RV. Maybe I'll, you know, join the Y. And so it's body to head. But doing the prayer that from Jill every morning, doing the devotional moving center, and also doing the micro yoga that Pamela taught us with gratitude. And also doing, Jill taught us the 7 I am statements of Christ along with the chakras, helped so much. And I did that every day this week and began to feel just this sort of ocean of love. It's like pink in color and warm. And I thought, well, what if I just act these prayers out all day? What if that's all I do? And I just thought, that's exactly all I have to do.
Yeah.
That's seek first the kingdom of God and all else shall be added. So it's just been wonderful, the devotional, the moving center with devotional movement. Mm.
Thank you. All shall be well. Ah, great. Thank you, Leslie. Karen, please.
Hi. I'm very thankful for the prayer that Jill offered, and I really found it very helpful for me. And I really found it very, that it just kind of, it embodied all the things that to be considered, throughout the day. And I really enjoyed it. And also, I kind of have felt that in my, I guess, formal prayer time, if you want to call it that, that I don't really include the body aspect as much as the emotional and the intellectual. So I sort of started thinking I go on a either walk or yoga almost every day, and other physical things. And I just thought, well, why don't I just sort of turn that around and make those prayers rather, try to bring more physical into my formal prayer, but kind of use those more, and being, for instance, like in yoga, just thankful that I can, you know, breathe the way that I'm breathing and move the way that I'm moving and using my body, and just make that my things that I do, you know, moving around, that those be more prayerful.
Wonderful. Father Rohr has a line, and I'm probably not going to quote it right, but that we wish to have everything we do become an act of praise of God. You know, how perfect. Take your everyday activity and make it a praise of God. Beautiful. Thank you. Time for one more. Is there anyone else who'd like to say anything? Bob.
I've been practicing for a while Tai Chi, and it turns out that the school I am within is called Ipsun, which means moving meditation. And I had a marvelous experience this morning in our practice together and at a park. And then I was able to stay there and did a sit by myself. And this was a lovely, lovely morning. But the moving meditation is a real thing. I'm really starting to understand it and bring it in. It's marvelous. Thank you.
Thank you. Hallelujah. Well, if there's nothing else to add right now, I will take us into our talk tonight, our three-centeredness in relationship to material objects. So, on a lighter note, with apologies to Julie Andrews, we are going to talk tonight a little bit about our relationship with a few of our favorite things. And here are a few of mine, and I'm not a particularly skillful photographer, but I'll tell you, this is the mahogany rocker is my grandmother's, was her grandmother's. The quilt was made for us by a church in another community. That's an antique upright piano that was given to me by my babysitter when her family moved. And then I think, like many of us, the pictures of our children and grandchildren. So as we begin to talk about our relationship with physical objects, we've got to touch into a little bit of physics, but nothing much. I just want to take us back to Ilya's talk last year. And she told us that, that matter is relatedness. So the reality isn't in the object, but in its relationships. She reminded us that God is the ultimate depth of everything that exists, but we must learn to see. So some of our other teachers in our lineage have talked about this as well. Gurdjieff said that everything is materiality, even God. Desjardins said that matter is spirit moving slowly enough to be seen. And even Albert Einstein said, matter is energy whose vibration has been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. So I think this is where we begin to define our relationship, what J.G. Bennett called our sacred relationship. And this is from his Sherborne themed talks, and there's a link to those in the slide for the homework tonight. So to start that examination, that self-examination of our sacred relationship with things, first, we have to acknowledge our attachment to material objects. You know, the work reminds us we're self-developing organisms living on a planet that is our school. Life is our school. So this material world is our testing ground. It's here that we can find the opportunities for, as the email stated, conscious, intentional transformation. So it's our relationship with material objects that gives us the opportunity to self-observe, not identify, self-remember. And as we all practiced last week, gratitude, we're reminded to always be thankful for everything that gives us the opportunity to work. Remember, you owe me nothing, I owe you everything, especially for this opportunity to work. So the fact is, really, we are dependent. This body cannot exist without material objects. We can't live without matter in solid state. We need food, we need water. You know, we've used the resources of Earth to support us, make the tools that enable us to be functional, to be good householders. And it's that relationship with the Earth that gives us the potential for that sacred relationship. But, you know, in World 48, in our sleep, we've become involved in all the consequences of our progress, the destruction of the land, pollution, the waste of resources. If we just look at the Earth as made for us, you know, we forget we have a responsibility for it. But to counteract destruction, is it just as simple as renouncing the material world? Well, Anthony DeMello told us that if we renounce something, we're stuck to it forever. But once we understand the object's true value, the need for possession drops away. J.G. Bennett again said, if we are asleep, material objects become our masters. If we are to begin to awake, we must understand how to be worthy masters of the material world. That's what he called our sacred relationship. This is where our opportunity is for personal, practical application of the work. Because mixed up in that sacred relationship is the notion of possession. Bennett was quoted in the May newsletter and the email as asking us to consider, is it really my tool, my instrument, my seat? Is it a part of me? Which I think we would call the wrong feeling of I. It's not me. And what do we even mean when we say mine or yours? Is the concept of possession something we have in our consciousness? Or is it something we have in our mechanicality? Sujuta said that detachment is not that you own nothing. Detachment means nothing owns you. So how do we become worthy masters of the material world? Well, as ever, the Bible can give us some great guidance. Mark in chapter 12 tells us simply, give back to Caesar that which is Caesar's and give to God that which is God's. In Matthew 6, we're told, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon the earth, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You cannot serve God and material wealth, but your heavenly Father knows you have need of things. And again, in Matthew chapter 19, is the story of the rich young man who asks Jesus what he must do. And Jesus tells him that he must sell all that he has to follow him. And he goes away sad because he cannot do this. Excuse me. So we can look at these three references and frankly do Lectio for days. But I think what we need to explore in them is, are we being told material things are evil? And I don't think it's that black and white. I think it's more a question of our relationship to those material objects. I think the message is, material objects aren't evil. The only thing evil is when we enter into the wrong relationship with material objects. And honestly, that's what we pray in the Lord's Prayer, to be delivered from evil. So what Bennett called our sacred relationship, we could call love. And that's a hard word in English, because I love that quilt. I love potato chips. I love God. But that doesn't mean the same thing. They're not the same quality of emotion. So about a year ago, I think it was September, we had a diagram that helped us define love through the work. First of all, I think we have to ask, what is love? And love is a choice. Love is a level of being that is a state of consciousness. So in this diagram, faith, the size of a mustard seed, will bring us to the ability to grow patience. And another word for patience might be perseverance. And with patience and perseverance, then we can have will. And as our will grows, we wish to align with God's will. And will bring us to understanding. Remember in the work, that's knowledge applied to being. And when I understand someone else, when I understand a condition and an event, then I can have love. I can externally consider. I can truly say, if I understood another, I would not disagree. And that's the love that can lead us to truth and good. And that's how I believe that we then can integrate our work into this sacred relationship. That's been a lot of talking. Is there any question, comment, insights that you'd like to offer up? One thing I got today in an email was saying, it was quoting a Native American, that we tend to think of, we have rights. I have rights to get all of this stuff. But the Native Americans think that they have responsibility, that they have a responsibility to the earth and to each other, which I thought was an interesting way of looking at, again, the American way, where we want more things. Becky, please.
Oh, got it there. Okay. There. So just a clarification, Karen, this is so amazing. So I know I've talked twice today. So, I was just with another elderly friend of mine this week, and she mentioned this whole thing about I was mentioning my daughter, and she said, well, what's your daughter's name? And I said, well, it's Thisa. And she said, you know, I never called my husband, I called him Tim. I called, they're Lisa and Dana and whatever, but they are not my daughter. And so I've just been in that whole inquiry of ownership, you know, which is really shifts the way you see things. So, but you said something about, we were talking about our objects. You said to understand the value of our objects, our attachment drops away. What did you say before that? So we think it's about getting rid of something or letting go, but.
Right, because, and this is from Anthony DeMello, and it's not a direct quote, but he says, if you denounce something, you're stuck to it forever.
Oh, denounce it. Okay, got it.
But or renounce it, I believe are his words.
Okay.
But once you understand its value, then, you know, you're free.
So to denounce it.
So a little bit about like what Greta was talking about earlier when she said that the copper ashtray.
Yes.
You know, so the ashtray may have cost me money.
Right.
But the value in it is who made it and what did they have to do to make it?
True.
And how did it come to me? I have a ring that was given to me by an older Native American woman. In and of itself, the value is somewhat limited.
Yeah.
But what I was brought to understand was that the value was incredible because to her, the ring had a spirit that said it needed to come live with me.
Got it.
So that's what I think that Anthony DeMello's talking about.
Right. Yeah, because I do remember going window shopping or shopping in a new way and feeling like I didn't have to own it to appreciate it. So then I could go into stores and not feel this pressure like I had to own everything I liked.
Yes.
And it made it so much more fun because then I could go into these antique stores and just reminisce, but not have to own it. So, okay. So I got that. That's very cool. I'll have to think it. All right. Thanks.
All right. Stephen, please. You're still muted, sir.
I think we have our hands full taking possession of ourselves. So, if we work from the inside out and integrate our centers and approach things that way, there's less of a need to possess anything else because that's just a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And I came across this elaboration of the parable of the carriage, the horse, and the driver, and the master. And how it's outlined in the commentaries is kind of the executive summary. There's a lot more to it than that. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of times what it is the carriage is just a hackney cab. And whatever master gets in the back seat could be anybody, somebody also drunk. You know, the master isn't always the master. There's levels of masters. And the best master is the one that owns the cab. Mm. He's in charge of the whole thing. So he's got his own private driver. The driver knows him and knows him intimately. And the driver takes care of the horse because they're all part of this integrated team. So that's sort of a kind of the material world allegory for what we should be doing inside is taking command as much as we can to be a responsible master, a permanent master, a reliable master of and a relationship with the driver, and everybody has a relationship. And that's like man number seven, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. I think you just finished my talk. Tamara.
I was just going to say that this is a very interesting topic because, I think it very much depends on how you were raised and, you know, what kind of atmosphere, and maybe what your parents or the community you're in maybe had put some sort of emphasis on, you know, who has the nicer car or who has a nicer house. And so for me, it's a very interesting, good self-observation, good way to not identify because, we are kind of raised to a certain extent, or at least I was kind of raised to a certain extent that, you know, whoever has the nicest car or has the nicest house is like held in a higher esteem, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the eyes that will come up and, you know, kind of reinforce that, it's a good work opportunity for me. And it has been, for years, you know, since I did the work to, just as day to day, you know, I think they're driving that nice car. So they must be really smart or something. And so it's just really interesting to like think about that and try to self-observe and not identify for me, as you know, especially it's a good work opportunity. And then I was also thinking about the fact that I was reading something recently, and I was reading something about spiritual pride and how some people think that, or they have this spiritual pride, if they give up everything, that then they are the most devoted, you know. So that's another thing to ponder, you know, as well. Anyways, good work opportunities, and thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, we're not necessarily called on to be monks. Lynn, please.
Good evening.
Hi.
I've been moving around a lot, probably in the last decade. And I can remember when I first had to leave a three-bedroom house that I had been living in. And I was just very concerned about what I was going to do with all of my worldly possessions and moving and packing and the boxing up and all that goes along with it. And in the multiple times that I've moved since then, I have gradually lightened my load. And one of the practices that I found extremely helpful as I was preparing to move yet again was that if I came upon a material object or something of mine that so many times I would hold it in my hands, I would remember what I had done with it, what it had meant to me at the time. And I would lift it up and just be so extremely grateful for what it had meant to me in my life at that time. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to place the object either in a friend's hands or maybe to be given away or donated. But over the years, I just have felt a real lightness. The heaviness of the responsibility or the weight of a lot of the material things that I really didn't need, it was lifted. And I just feel so much more free now. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. It's an amazing freedom when we can, I think, pass on something like you said to a friend or even just to Goodwill. We don't know where they're going. It's somebody needs it more than I do.
Right.
And my grandmother used to talk about not locking the tool shed because if somebody went in there and took a tool, they needed it more than she did or that my grandfather did. And what a great way to think about things.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all about the relationship that you have with them.
It is.
And wishing that whatever that object is can be of help and benefit to the next person.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let me... Everybody has done a great job of finishing my talk, so I'm going to repeat maybe a couple things. Thank you all for your sharing. But one of the things you've all touched on is the fact that as humans, we always seem to be looking for something more. And certainly in our sleep in World 48, we think that something more is going to be satisfied with things. Like Tamara said, the nicer house, the better car. We think we have to have that thing in order to be happy. Frankly, our whole system of capitalism, I think, is fairly built on that. But if you look at all of your earthly treasures that you've gathered, they're really just a definition of your imaginary eye. That's not you. And we've spoken in the past of magnetic center. And
that's what's brought us to CCH. That's what's gotten us here in the Journey School, because we're looking for something more, but something more than mechanical life. Well, I wonder if magnetic center can also help us to understand that point that Greta brought up, that there's more to my collection of objects. You know, it's through the work that we've understood now that having a lot of things has nothing to do with being a success, that we're a success when we wake up. But we forget, we fall asleep, we confuse our source of happiness. Instead of trying to find pleasure in God, we look for pleasure in objects. And some of us are, quite frankly, afraid to be deprived of them. And I'm going to share a quick story here on my husband and not throwing him under the bus. But about 6 years ago, when his parents died, he and his brother went to the house they'd grown up in, divided up all the furniture, and he brought home a great deal of furniture to our house that we didn't need. But he did. He needed to process. He needed to work through his grief. But in the meantime, in these 6 years, he's also become very attached to it all. And now he can't let go of it. And I'm not saying that as a judgment. It's just an observation. As a work student, I can begin with my self-observation to let go of the possession and begin to see the mystery that Bennett described in the email. So again, you know, Greta's point on Gurdjieff also said something to the effect of a cup of coffee can be that mysterious. There's an old movie with a line that says, can you pick up a handful of dirt and not see dirt, but see a miracle? And Madame de Salzman said that what's behind that which is visible is sacred. Can we be mindful of sacred? So as we've talked this part of our curriculum about three centers, and remembering that each center is a mind, and each center takes in an impression in a unique way, we want to work with our three centers and their gifts to bring an energy that we would call higher hydrogens, to allow our attention to our attraction to change direction. A couple months ago, Peter gave us a great exercise, a video exercise, asking us which center was being activated. And that would be a great exercise to do with those few of your favorite things. We want to bring the same attention, the same degree of activity in all three centers into the relationship with the object. That's the beginning of our sacred relationship. Now, in the commentaries on page 652, Dr. Nickel talks about the food of impressions and how that's the most important food of all. Because how we receive an impression, how we react to an impression, reveals the impression's materiality, but also our attachment. He calls our attention to the fact that impressions can change our inner state. You know, how do you take in the impression of your favorite things? What do you feel when you break that special something or when you've lost that special something? As Tamara pointed out early in our first education, you know, we get these impressions from school and from friends about the right house, the right clothes, the right car. But this bases our existence on pride and vanity. It's the wrong feeling of I. But in the state of self-remembering, we do realize, as Stephen said, that we are the most precious objects we have. Now, I've put the quotes on a slide for you, so they will be in the archive here. Like I said, some of them that I've mentioned were paraphrased. So at the beginning, Ilya Dilio is about God being the ultimate depth of everything that exists, but we must learn to see.
And Pierre de Chatan, the matter is spirit moving slowly enough to be seen. J.G. Bennett, if we're asleep, material objects become our masters. If we begin to awake, we must understand how to be worthy masters of the material world. And Sujata's, detachment is not that you own nothing. Detachment means nothing owns you. So, like Lynch, we go home and Marie Kondo our lives? Well, frankly, maybe. But I'd like to close with Jack Kornfield's quote. To let go does not mean to get rid of. To let go means to let be. When we let be with compassion, things come and go on their own. I'd like to share a short story with you about my father, Henry. So back in 2008, Henry decided he wanted to move to Austin after the death of his second wife. Now, just for a little bit of context, when he married his second wife, he cut off all contact with his family. So for 30 years, I didn't talk to my father. But when his wife died, he wanted to move to Austin. So I flew to Maryland to go pick him up. And I expected to be met with boxes and moving vans and all the trappings of someone moving across country. And there was none of that. And I came to the door and Dad said he was ready to go. And he had two suitcases. He was never a clothes horse. A box of sacred materials, a box of household things, one of her paintings, she was an artist, and his hat and his coat. And we put it in his car and we drove to Texas. And I was like, you know, Dad, don't you want to take, you've got 30 years of memories here. Don't you want to take anything? And he said, no, I don't need any of it anymore. Now, I'm sure her children came in later and took care of objects, not that we closed the house and left it derelict. But I was just so impressed with my father's ability to just let go of possessions that weren't going to feed him anymore. And I believe in that letting go also enabled him and me to heal our relationship. And we had a wonderful relationship until he passed in 2016. So I think there's a lot of wonder in letting go. And let me get to homework before it gets too long here. So there's a YouTube video, The Whole Universe is Vibrating. It's awesome. So the first 2 minutes may be what particularly is relative, but oh, it's just wonderful. So does your view of what you call inanimate objects change in any way? And then as a practical exercise, take a much used object, your cell phone, don't we all have them all the time? And make functional, practical work contact with it. Can you distinguish between thinking about the phone, using the phone, and being in contact with it? You know, sharing its existence? And what did you learn about yourself from this practice? And then here's the link to the Sherborn theme talks of J.G. Bennett. It's a very, very good read. And so with that, I will turn it back over to you, Marianne.
Thank you, Karen, very much for a wonderful evening and for sharing that delightful story about your father with all of us. I'm going to click my video off for just a second. Yes, sometimes it goes out of focus, but it's own accord. So we'll just go forward from here. Not that that's bad to be fuzzy, could be better. So we'll have a closing word from Rodney Collin, who echoes much of what we've already heard. He just reinforces it for us. Rodney Collin says, "Nothing belongs to us except the love of God. Everything else is lent to us to use for others. For this reason, we are to take care of our things so that when someone else needs them, they may be available. We shall have to give account for everything we have not taken care of. If we arrange our house for ourselves, saying, 'This is my house,' it will not be arranged aright. If we remember our responsibility, that we are to project something, give something through our house, give to those who come into it an impression, our house will be arranged harmoniously. We are to connect everything. If we want our house to be harmonious, we are to connect the things in it with our purpose and with their surroundings, with our attention to the intention." So let us look and see this coming week and know and pray aloud the prayer of God's love, God's infinite love that allows anything to exist at all, that God's love has met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.